Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's the day after Christmas, Unboxing Day.
You've got all those great new toys. How do you set them up?
And plus our favorite apps of the whole year.
The app of the year coming up on iOS Today.
iOS Today is brought to you by GoToWebinar, a trusted webinar platform with over 55,000 customers who've hosted over 2.7 million interactive web events to connect with their audiences. For more, visit GoToWebinar.com/podcast.
iOS Today time. This is the most wonderful time of the year. You've got all new toys and you want to play with them, but you don't know how to cheer.
Now, if you could put that in an emoji, we'd have
fun. We were talking before the show. I said they're dopey, so she had to tweet that.
I tweeted you some and I sent you several.
Yeah,
so.
I got them. Yeah, thank
I
you very
think
much.
I'm going to be an emoji Broadway star.
You'll be the first. Okay. iOS Today is a show where we talk about iPad, iPhone, Apple Watch, Apple TV, all the stuff with iOS in it. And I'm Leo Laporte.
I'm Megan Maroney.
And I hope you'll join us every week. Now, this is a special week because, of course, it's the day after Christmas and we're not here.
No.
We're busy enjoying life with our families.
We are AR. We're augmented reality hosts.
But several weeks ago, we recorded a show presuming that you received many Apple products, many iOS products, many toys, and we're going to show you what you need to know to get them running.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so let's start with the iPhone, the biggie.
Yeah.
Did you
get a 10? Did you get an 8? Did you get a 7? Did you get any iPhone? So the first thing, of course, you do when you get a new iPhone is you turn it on. Now, the newest iPhone, the iPhone 10, is a little different than previous iPhones because it has an eSIM in it. In the old days, the first thing I would do is I would go to the old phone, I'd pop out the SIM, and there is a SIM slot here, and pop it into the new phone. But this time you don't have to do that. You can activate the phone with a phone call to your carrier, and that will activate it via the eSIM. So that's probably the first thing you're going to want to do when you turn on your phone. But even before you turn on your phone, there is something you want to do. And that is, in most cases, some people like to install from scratch. You do that, right?
I do. I start fresh.
That's why you don't know how to do what I'm about to do.
No, I have no idea.
I like to take the existing phone. I'll tell you why. If you look at my phone, that's my front page. Very carefully curated with the apps I use the most and folders for the apps I want quick access to. The second page, carefully categorized. In fact, I just downloaded a new app and I put it right there into the games folder. And the third page is Apple stuff and stuff, you know, kind of hidden stuff in the background there.
Mm.
Three pages. That's a lot of time that took me to organize that. Mm. I don't want to do that ever again.
Mm.
So what I like to do when I get a new phone is back up, make an image of the old phone. Now, if you're backing up to iCloud, of course, that works perfectly well. It does it kind of constantly in the background. Apple prefers that because, of course, they charge you for all that storage that you're using on iCloud. So I think it's probably not the best. Where is iCloud? Maybe it's in here. You could tell I use iCloud a lot. I don't even see it. There's a setting in here somewhere.
To back up?
Well, yeah, I just want to show the iCloud settings.
Hmm. I think it's in your picture. Tap your little photo.
Oh, is it up here?
Yes, tap.
There we go. Yep. It's probably in the account settings.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly I would use iCloud for backup. Notice I currently don't have it backing up mail because I use an IMAP server. I don't have it backing up contacts because I use Google Calendars, same thing. But I do reminders and notes because those are Apple specific. Safari, you want to back up your keychain and your bookmarks. You know, the other apps I do. And I do use iCloud backup. Actually, it's off on this phone as a secondary form of backup. My recommendation, though, is if you've got a computer and you've got iTunes, you do that on iTunes in your computer. So this is what you'll be doing. You'll connect. I got my laptop here, and I've got my my lightning cable that goes into my laptop. I'm going to plug this into the phone. And then let me show you my laptop screen, Kevin. I think you... So the first thing I see, because I... Now, this has changed a little bit, but it's important to understand that for a couple of reasons, Apple ties each phone to a particular iTunes. Not the account, but the actual physical hardware. So notice it says, do you want to allow this computer to access information on the iPhone 10? If you don't allow access, you won't be able to manage or sync your phone with this computer. So you're going to say yes. All right. You're going to make sure your phone is unlocked, and it's going to then put a little message up on your phone. Let me do that again. And it says, look at my phone now. I know this is complicated. Trust this computer. Your settings and data will be accessible from this computer. So if this is the first time you've connected it, you'll have to trust it, and then you'll have to enter your passcode. Now you can hide it because I don't want anybody to see that. So Face ID doesn't work in that situation. Now I have connected and iTunes is launching. Let's show the iTunes window. And one of the things that happens, and this is, to me, is a little bit of a troubling thing on the iTunes. It's not immediately obvious where your phone is. This is my iTunes music collection. There is a little logo up here, a little, good luck finding that little phone logo. And then devices will list it. Now we're looking, see how different that looks? Now we're looking at the phone, we're looking at the music, the movies, but I want to look at settings. For that, I have to click the little icon, okay? It's confusing, but this is how you see the device. The backups is the section that you really want to look at. I always turn on automatically backup. Now, this is where you could choose to backup to the cloud. But again, especially with these new 256 gig iPhones, that's going to be a lot of storage. So let's back up just to the computer. I like that. And then there's a checkbox here that's very important. Encrypt phone backup. It's grayed out on my system, but it is checked. If you've not done this before, you want to check that. And you will need to provide a password. The reason it's grayed out is because, look, it's already syncing and backing up. This is how you know it's backing up here. iTunes is the most obscure, bizarre software ever, and I don't blame people for using iCloud. But if you can learn to use this, it's going to be faster and easier. So let me stop that. Now I can go back up here. Backups. Backup to cloud? No. Backup to this computer, and then check the box, encrypt phone backup. So you're going to give it a password. And that's important because that is going to allow, if you encrypt the phone backup, unless you encrypt the phone backup, it will not copy passwords. It will not copy the keychain. It'll keep your private stuff private by not putting in the backup. When you're restoring a new iPhone, you want to make sure it's an encrypted backup because that way you'll get all that stuff. That's the whole point, is not to have to re-enter passwords, not to have to re-enter settings. So we're going to backup. Doesn't take very long, even on this big iPhone, this 256 gig iPhone. It's only going to take about 10 minutes to backup. Once you've backed up, this is with your old phone, remember, you now have a copy of what's on your old phone on your Apple, or actually this works with the PC too, on your hard drive. Now you take that new phone, you turn it on, you do all the things it asks, you get the SIM working and everything. And then at some point in that, and I should have really erased my iPhone to show you this, but I just didn't want to start all over. But at some point in that, it'll say, okay, do you want to restore from a previous iPhone? Say yes. And then it will say, how do you want to do that? iCloud, or do you want to do it from iTunes? You say iTunes, and you'll get a logo on your phone that has a little iTunes icon and a lightning cable. So that's when you connect this up, and it'll say on your desktop, okay, do you want to restore? And it'll show you, initially, it'll show you the backup you just did. But if you want, you could pull down and use previous backups too. I would always do the one you just did. That's why you just did a fresh backup. Restore, take a walk, take a break, have a cup of coffee. 10 minutes later, your iPhone setup will be there, but you'll notice that the App Store is re-downloading apps. Some things are not preserved. I think they don't take the old apps because they want to make sure you have the latest version of all the apps. So you want to do this when you're connected to a high-speed internet connection, a good Wi-Fi connection. It'll re-download all the apps. Some of your other data will not be there. Music, for instance, will not be there. You'll need to re-download that. You could do that easily by connecting to iTunes and syncing up. Audiobooks, another thing that won't be there. You'll have to re-download those. But this is the, I think this is the simplest way to back up your old phone and move it to the new phone. I do this a lot. I did it with the iPhone 8 and then a couple months later with the iPhone 10. And it's because I do it so often, I want to go with the easiest way. It doesn't cost you extra for iCloud storage. I still would maybe, you know, turn on iCloud backup if you don't mind paying for iCloud storage, just because then you have a continuous backup going. But for this particular purpose, the best way to do it, I think, is with iTunes on a desktop.
Here's the thing that always gets me. Messages. Whenever I start up, whether I go from a backup or start fresh, my messages are gone.
Yeah.
They're the history of my messages, and I need those to prove that I'm right in arguments, especially with you, Leo.
This is really puzzling, and we've done some research, and it's very puzzling. So essentially, when you get a new device, the message database on that device begins the day you turn on that device, even if you restore. In other words, the database is not backed up to iTunes. However, it is on iCloud. We know it's stored somewhere by Apple, and I'll tell you how we know. Each device has its own start date the day you put that device into service. So this is the iPhone 10. I can only go back until November 8th with your message history because that's when I use the iPhone 10. On the iPad, I got it in, I think it was July, so I can only go back to July. On my Macintosh, I can go back even farther. This is the same iMessages, and actually this is my messages to you going back to March. That was, now this stops at March. So there are different histories on each of these three devices, and not coincidentally, the history begins when you activate the device. Even if... Because Apple has a setting, and we'll show this on the Apple Messages, to how you want to keep this. And you can show it on your phone, too. You can do it on your phone, too. Of 30, how long do you want to keep messages? 30 days, 1 year, or forever. You can check the box that says save history even when you close a conversation. That means I can close a conversation with you, but then if I send you another text message, all of that history comes flooding back. And so that's all preserved. So we know that Apple is probably on iCloud saving those messages. They exist. I'm thinking it's a security thing. I don't know why. Apple confuses it because when they say keep messages forever, that implies that message will exist forever. What it should say, and there's not enough room on the button, is keep messages forever, except when you have a new device, and then just keep messages from when you got the new device till now.
It's infuriating because you always hear about, like, oh, they found out this secret through a message. Those messages are there. If a law enforcement person
iCloud
wanted to get them,
law enforcement can get them.
But I can't get them. Like, I want to see what you said 2 weeks ago. I want to see what I said 2 weeks ago. I can't remember anything. This is my brain now. And so it's so frustrating that I can't.
Now, I'm open to other solutions. So if you, now, one thing we do know, you can't get a third party app and do that, mm-hmm. but it will only restore the messages. It will only back up the messages that are on that device. Ecamm, for instance, makes iPhone View or Phone View, which is a really great $30 app that lets you copy voicemail as well and other stuff from your phone to your computer. But it can only get what's on the phone. And I'm not clear, but my guess is it's not on the phone. The phone's history starts the day it's born. iCloud's history starts, we don't know how far back, forever, starts when you started using messages, I think. So maybe this calls for a call to Apple. Are you saving these? Is there any way to access them? You can't log into iCloud and see them. You know, that would be, by the way, the simple solution. If Apple in iCloud would add an icon for messages. It has Pages and, you know, all the other iWork apps. It has your calendar. It has Find My iPhone. Just needs one more. Messages, right? Mm-hmm. That would be your infinite history that we do think Apple has stored on iCloud. Maybe they haven't. I don't know. Maybe they only go as far back as your oldest Mac. But I'll tell you what. I have a 2012 PowerBook 15-inch. John just gave me a power supply so I can plug this in. This beat up old power. So I have that at home because I thought, you know, why should, you know, we've just been sitting on a shelf. Why should, so I will go into that, open messages and see if I have messages from you going back 5 years. If I do, then that I don't know what that confirms.
I don't know.
It means the database is on that machine. Now, there, in theory, if you could do brain surgery, you could take the database from that machine and put it on your phone. Because there are two simple database files, the data and the index. There's also a file for images, attachments. And if you could, maybe eCam would let you, I don't know, maybe their software would let you move that to the phone. And that would then restore your history back as far as you go. So it is weird. I think you just have to say, my messages history, and Apple means, what Apple means when they mean forever is the oldest device you still have in use. That's forever.
Right.
So, that's all I can figure out.
Yeah. I mean, you can see why businesses have started using things like Slack or HipChat or Microsoft's Teams, I think it's called, because you want to have access to that knowledge. And so now that, you know, carrying on business conversations via iMessage or messages isn't exactly that efficient.
Well, there also is the issue, and actually Uber got in trouble with a judge because Uber was using a messaging program that deleted messages within 24 hours, kind of like Snapchat. Mm-hmm. And the judge says, you can't do that. If you're doing that to defend yourself against potential litigation, like you don't want anybody to know what these conversations were, then that not only is that wrong and illegal, you're supposed to preserve those conversations just as you preserve your email, but the judge can instruct juries to presume that whatever disappeared was negative, was against the company that used that deleting messages thing. So there, it may be that Apple just decided we don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
And yet I do think you're right. I think law enforcement could probably go to Apple and say, hey, we want to know what Megan and Leo were talking about in 2012 and get that information. I bet it's stored on iCloud. We don't know for sure. Greater minds will have to help us. You can email Megan at twit.tv and tell us where we're wrong. Somebody in the chat room is saying, no, it should be in the backup if you restore the phone, but it isn't. I restored this phone, and the oldest message I have on here is November 8th when I first set up the iPhone 10. It may be in the backup, but it doesn't restore it from the backup, as far as I can tell. It's very very confusing, I think. My oldest message to my son is November 7th. I know I've talked to him since before then. So, more on this messages thing. They say even though the messages are not restored to your phone, they are in the backup. And you can use a tool like iExplorer to actually go through your old backups and find the content of those messages. This is iExplorer. It isn't free, but you can download. And you see here are all the previous backups. Here's my iPhone 7 Plus backup. Should we explore that? Let's see. Are there messages in here? You have to decrypt the backup. All right. Hope you remember this. If you don't, it won't work. It's verifying the password. Now, the only problem is emojis aren't represented apparently accurately. But, yeah, here's old messages. Going back to August.
That can't be all of your messages.
September. Well, that's an interesting thing. Here, hide my screen. I don't want to show. Well, you and I haven't said anything weird. Let's see. Going back to September 22nd, 2017. That's not that far back. And this is the iPhone 7. So this actually is when I backed up the iPhone 7 to restore it to set up the iPhone 8. But there's nothing that old on here. So I'm not sure how true that is. And by the way, that's not that useful because you can't just say, okay, now put that on my phone. We have spent more than I wanted to.
All right, so
let's move on.
One last thing on the iPhone: get yourself a case. I'm not using a case right now, but I use one of the excellent wallet cases that Leo gave me. But there's another case called the Codaby. These are really nice. I just recently got these, and of course the Peel case. And I cannot recommend a case enough. My son, who has an iPhone 6. Lost his case and
he broke his phone immediately.
Yep. And I offered him one of my old cases. He was like, "That's rose gold. No, thank you." And
I don't want this, Mom.
And I said, "Okay, you're paying for it if it breaks." And it broke, and he paid for it to be fixed.
It's so funny. I gave, of course, whenever I buy a phone for my kids, same thing. I say, you're going to put a OtterBox on it. Abby was very good. She put it, dutifully put an OtterBox on it and so forth. But after, you know, a year or so, it gets a little grungy inside. She took the case off to clean the phone and clean the inside and immediately dropped and broke the phone. Mm-hmm. So your experience and my experience, that's 100% failure rate. If you don't have a case, you will break your phone.
The phones are slippery. And they're just getting to be more slippery. And if you regularly use a case, I think it's just mind memory. Like, you don't hold it as tight. And so when you take the case off, it's going to easily slip out of your hands. So whatever new iPhone you got, get a case for that thing.
Indeed, indeed.
Setting up a new iPad. Hopefully you've got a new iPad, one of you or
two of
you.
It's very similar to setting up the iPhone. Yeah, you back up the iPad to iTunes. Again, I really prefer you do that than to back up to iCloud. It's slow and expensive. But you back it up to iTunes, get the new iPad out, restore it. If you want to do the Megan Maroney's tabula rasa method, which, by the way, sounds like a fine Middle Eastern salad. I'd like some tabula rasa for lunch. The tabula rasa method, then you would start over from scratch, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One other tip for setting up your new device is that Apple now asks for two-factor. So make sure you have another device around, a Mac, or if you're setting up an iPad, make sure you have your iPhone around. If you don't have a Mac, what is? I guess it might send it. It would send a text message to you if you're setting up. But yeah, two-factor. So don't be caught setting up your new device and not have another device.
They can, you know, if you don't have a device, you can have them call your phone and give you a number or text you. So there are other backup methods to do that. But it is a lot easier. In fact, if you know, most people have an iPad, have an iPhone, or have a Macintosh. It is a lot easier if you have another device.
So over the weekend, I bought myself an Apple TV, a new 4K Apple TV. I broke down. I bought my own Apple device with my own money. They're backed, back ordered at Apple, but I ordered it from B&H Photo.
So the 32 gig is not, but the 64 gig, I know it's like 8 weeks back ordered. Yeah. Is that the one you wanted?
I think I got the 32 gig.
Yeah, that's why you were able to get it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, because why do you need the 64
you don't.
Gig?
And it's just that people look at it and say, well, it's $100
right,
more.
It's like you buy the extra large soda at
you
the movies.
You probably don't, unless you store a lot of apps. If you put a lot of apps on your Apple TV, maybe. I think 32 gigs is enough for most people.
I have the old Apple TV, which is perfectly fine. And we have an Android TV that is just one version too old to let me speak to it. I would have to get a special remote. And I have gotten addicted to speaking to my TV. Like, I don't like having to enter passwords or do searching with my hand. So I just thought, and we all have a 4K TV. So I thought it was time to get the 4K Apple TV. And so setting up the Apple TV is pretty self-explanatory. You just plug it in. There's nothing really fancy about setting up a new Apple TV.
I think if there's anything you want to do, of course, you're right. If you're going to watch 4K, you've got to make sure you have enough bandwidth. HDR makes a huge difference, but you won't see anything unless you have a TV that supports UHD HDR. Most new ones do. And it does look really great, but you'll need at least 25 megabits per second download speed. And frankly, 50 would be better if you want to see those in all their glory. And they really look good. One more thing you might want to do, if you've ever bought movies or TV shows on iTunes, go check them out, because some of them will have been upgraded. Anything that was HD and is now available in 4K, is Apple's automatically upgrading for you. So you might want to go back and watch some of those shows in glorious HDR, because you own them.
Right. I should buy a bunch before in non-HDR, right? And for cheaper?
Yeah. No, I don't think Apple's charging more. That's a really interesting question. Yeah, because that would be a clever hack.
Yeah.
Buy the HD version, let Apple upgrade. I don't think it does that.
Probably not. They're smarter than me. A few things for your Apple TV. If you were new to Apple TV, the things that got our family excited about it was Crossy Road. That's a fun family game.
That's one of the few games that really does well on the Apple TV.
And then we use our Steel Series Nimbus devices that I have here to play with those. You can play with your Apple remote, but it's more fun with
that. Happens every holiday, right? You get everything but one thing that you really like. So I think a lot of times on December 26th, there's people shopping saying, for instance, I need a Steel Series Nimbus.
You do.
And you do. Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot. If you're going to play games on the Apple TV, it makes it a lot more fun. Mm-hmm.
Another thing you can set up is your Nest on your Apple TV. That's what you have. There's a Nest app for your Apple TV.
In fact, that's probably a good idea, is to look at all the IoT devices in your house, whether it's a Ring doorbell or a Nest, and see if there's Apple apps for it, for the Apple TV. Because, yeah, it's really great to be able to look at your cameras on your big screen TV, see what's going on. It's kind of fun. In fact, if there's nothing good on TV, just watching the backyard sometimes is, it's really all you need.
Mm-hmm. So we are going to talk about how you charge all these devices, setting up some of your new toys, and then we're going to do the app of the year.
App of the year. This was not easy to pick the app of the year.
But first, we're going to thank our sponsor for this show.
Our show today, I'm actually pleased because normally we don't get advertisers on our best of year-ender shows, but GoToWebinar said, hey, we really want you to talk about GoToWebinar, and I'm happy to do it. I've led many a GoToWebinar. It is a great platform for leading conferences, talks, informative interviews, shows. Here's how it works. You can have up to 6 presenters talk to kind of an unlimited number of people, both live and on demand, about almost any subject. And it makes it really easy to set up. You can create custom email invitations, confirmations, and reminders. GoToWebinar even has automated email templates. It'll make it simple. You can display your company logo and custom image on all the webinar materials. Then you can create and schedule pre-recorded webinars that are just as interactive as live events. And I really like that. You don't want to always have to be, you know, in person for a webinar. This way, you can create a webinar and people can watch it at any time at their convenience, but it's still interactive. By the way, completely mobile friendly, whether it's you as the presenter scheduling a webinar or editing a session or tracking performance from your iOS or Android device. And of course, your attendees can watch on their iOS or Android device. I love the poll feature too, by the way. It's one of the great features of GoToWebinar because it keeps your audience engaged, kind of gives you a sense of how well they're getting what's going on. And it makes it just more fun. You can create up to 20 polls either before the session or even on the fly as you talk. You could say, you know, I'd like to know how many of you use this product, that kind of thing. You can add up to 20 questions to a survey, engage participants with Q&A. And, of course, as I said, more than one presenter and panelist, up to 6 presenters can share their webcams, participate face-to-face. You can broadcast a view of your desktop or a specific application. And you'll know exactly who watched for how long and when because their reporting and analytics is second to none. You're just a click away from qualified leads and metrics and data to improve your webinars. Of course, fully secure end-to-end 128-bit AES encryption. There's no surprise. GoToWebinar is number one in customer satisfaction. So turn your next presentation into a conversation with GoToWebinar. To know more, go to GoToWebinar.com/podcast. That's GoToWebinar.com/podcast, and we thank GoToWebinar for their support of iOS today.
Okay, some toys. You got some toys for the holidays.
I hope
whatever
I got
holidays
some toys
you're
for the holidays.
Celebrating. These are on my kids' gift guide. You got to watch my kids' gift guide. It was on the screensavers.
It was really good.
Thank you. Yeah. You haven't actually watched it yet, but I'm sure you will think it's really good. We recorded this in the past, and it is in the future.
So confusing time. It's so confusing.
It is. But one of the things on my gift list is the droids from Sphero, who I love these droids. They're a bit expensive. This one is $170, and
yikes!
This one's $150.
But they're so cute.
They're so cute. So you want to set them up on all your devices, which is pretty easy. But the reason why I bring them out here is because you now, with all these new toys, pretty much everything requires a USB charge. These both need to be charged with micro USB.
Thank goodness we have.
Yes.
A USB charger.
So you have got to get yourself one or many of these. We have that one. We have this anchor one that I'm using right now to plug.
I'll tell you why I like this anchor one.
Okay, let's
it
take
has,
a look at this.
What do they call it? Smart IQ or something.
Mm-hmm.
It IQ charging. It's smart about IQ Plus. It's smart about the ports. So here's this is not clear. I think I'm going to try to clear this
okay,
all up.
Okay, yeah. I'm always confused.
Devices need a certain amount of wattage to charge. For instance, the iPad is an 11-watt device. Your iPhone can charge on a 5-watt charger or even less. 5 watts would be the maximum unless you do the new iOS 11.2 upgrade. And then it can do a 7-watt wireless charger. The limitation comes from the USB specification itself. USB port, a normal USB port, has 5 volts times 1 amp, or usually it can be less. The amount of watts is volts times amps. So if you have 5 volts, 1 amp, that's a 5-watt charger. Apple's specification, as I said, is 11 watts. So that's why you have those big chargers for the iPad. The Apple's Macintosh chargers are capable of doing higher overvoltage charging. And now with Type 3 charging, we can even go all the way up. I think that those top out at more than 100 watts, certainly 80 or 90 watts. So the trick with something like this is to get your magnifying glass out and read the fine print here. This says 36-watt 4-port turbo power charger. What that means, though, is it's 36 watts divided among 4. If you plug in 4 devices, you won't get more than 9 watts per port. If you plug in 1 device, you may, in fact, get all 36 watts. So that's the output, and you can see here 5 volts times 7.2 amps. So that's where it gets 36 watts. But it depends on the device, but in most cases, and you should look at the specification for the device, that's going to be maxed out. So 36 watts is the total, not any individual port. That's fine, though, because even if you have all the ports used, you're going to get 9 watts out of this. That's enough to charge an iPad, not at full speed, but at least somewhat speed. And if you unplug a couple of these, and that's why, by the way, this probably says Apple on it, and that's why IQ charging is good. IQ charging will then charge it at the maximum it has available to it. And in this case, for an iPad, you want 11 watts.
That one says Apple, and then it says Android, which I think they're just trying to dumb it down, but that doesn't necessarily...
That doesn't
mean
anything.
There's a lot of USB things
that's
that
meaningless.
Are not Android.
It's all Type A USB connectors, okay. Right? Now that we have the new Type C connectors...
This one has a Type C, right?
Yeah, and one of the reasons that Anker puts a Type C on there, we'll just show you this. You can see it has a Type C connector there. That would be, of course, for a high wattage device, that would be ideal, because that is a higher rating, as I mentioned. By the way, charging over Type-C is different from data over Type-C. The Type-C specification is vastly confusing. They all look the same. They may not all do the same thing. In this case, this is a charger. This is going to be Type-C charging, obviously. So I do like the Anchors, but you'll see other devices with smart charging on it. And if you have a Type-C connector, for instance, to your Macintosh, use the Type-C connector because that's going to give you the fastest possible charging rate. It's all about wattage, and the real problem is that the older USB standard, USB 2 and USB 3.1, maxed out at 5 volts, so you had a limited amount of wattage that you could put out from those. This new Type-C standard gives you a lot more wattage. What is this?
Okay,
Power
this
to
is
you.
From Newer Tech.
I like Newer Tech a lot. They do good stuff.
And it's for the outlet. So what
I like
would
that.
You?
I like
so this
that.
Gives you 2 plugs and then 2 USBs.
So you know if you're handy and you understand how to change power outlets, you could do it yourself. But remember, you've got to cut the power to that outlet.
Right. That I started watching the instructional video. I haven't done it myself, but it's one of my goals is to
not
start
a hard thing
doing
to do.
More.
It just takes a regular screwdriver
yeah.
and.
But really, yeah, it matches up. Yeah, the most important thing.
If you can get it out of the packaging, you're going to be ready to go.
So the most important thing, as you said, is turning the power off and figuring out.
Because that is high. That is,
yeah.
Talk about wattage. So, that's a lot of volts coming through there.
I'll let you know in the new year. Maybe my New Year's resolution is to do more do-it-yourself projects like this. Because this, you maybe don't need 4 outlets or 10 outlets right. like that Anker thing. I mean, the Anker, we have 2 of the Anker multi-ports at a charging station that we keep in our bedroom that I highly recommend for anyone who has kids with devices, because it's nice to have some people call it a device parking lot. We call it a device gas station because you're offering them charge while you're keeping your devices in your room and away from the children at night.
If you have a Mac, or actually it doesn't really matter if you have a Mac, but if you have, this is for the Mac, but these are docking stations, a lot of computers, a lot of laptops. This is designed specifically for the latest Macintosh MacBook Pros. This comes from Otherworld Computing. And the reason it's designed for the latest Macintoshes, an iMac would work as well, because it's using Thunderbolt 3. That's really cool. So it has a standard power cord. You plug it in. That means it's going to have more than enough wattage to power a lot of devices. You see it has 2 Thunderbolt 3 ports. That's a mini display port, full-size Ethernet it's nice because it gives you FireWire capability. Four USB 3 first generation ports, and this one's high powered. They actually label this, and that's what we were talking about earlier. That'd be a high wattage, suitable, for instance, for an iPad. And then even on the front, an SD card reader and a headphone jack and another high powered USB 3.1 first generation port. So that is going to be, again, suitable for something like an iPad. So a dock is a great way to solve this. If you have a laptop and you have a desk and you bring the laptop home, you plug it in, you're powering the laptop, you're connecting all these doohickeys to the laptop, but it also means that you can power and charge all your devices. So this is another way you could do that, is come home, plug it all in, and you're good to go.
How much does that dock cost? Do you
remember? This is $300. They have a variety of them. This is from Otherworld Computing, maxsales.com. That's what I paid for it, but the price may have gone down. I pre-ordered it when they first announced it, because I really like this idea. These docks really can save a lot of connectivity issues. You know, you just got all the ports you need, because Apple doesn't put many ports on its new MacBook Pros.
And I know we've given you a lot of things to buy after you've probably spent all of your money.
It
I know
happens
I have.
Every time,
but
doesn't it?
One thing about dongles, when you think, "Oh goodness gracious, how am I going to hook up my iPhone 7 and higher?" Don't forget that you get a dongle with each iPhone. Like, they kind of hide it a little bit, but they're still. So if you have a 7, an 8, and a 10, I don't know anybody besides us crazy people that have gotten all those phones. But don't forget that the dongle is in here and your headphones are in here. You don't need to buy extra ones. So,
do you ever use your Lightning headphones, or you just use your AirPods?
I use Bluetooth. Yeah, I use AirPods, and then for running, I use different Bluetooth headphones. I never use these. We have a plethora of these.
I know. I have quite a few of them. At least Apple stopped packaging them in those hard plastic cases. Now they're in cardboard.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, kids use them, you know, because
that's what I save them for, because kids lose headphones.
Yeah, so and they have to use them for school now.
Do they really?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they have to listen to during.
And they wouldn't want to give AirPods to a kid. That's just asking for trouble.
Yeah, I don't know. They are a bit. They're a big. They were a big seller this holiday season, as I heard.
As they should be. This is a great product. Mm-hmm. You might be looking sometime in the next month or so. Apple's going to come out with its new wireless charging pad, designed to work with your iPhone, your Apple Watch, and if you get a new case, even with the AirPods, you could just put all three of those on that pad. They unfortunately didn't make it in time for the holidays, because that would have been a great holiday gift.
It would have been, too. And then we didn't show how to set up your Apple Watch, but that's pretty self-explanatory, too. I mean, you basically, there's nothing. I mean, you can back it up. If you want to save your workout, if you're going from one old Apple Watch to a new one and you want to save your workout information, then definitely back up first.
And I was very impressed with the way Apple handled the new phone. When you get a new phone, if you've got a watch paired to the old phone, the new phone will say, "Oh, I see you have an Apple Watch. It's paired to a different phone. Would you like me to take over?" And it made it very simple. You didn't have to go into the watch settings and reset the watch or anything like that. It just, you did that little magic sparkly ball thing, mm-hmm. and I was able to pair the watch. It erased everything, reinstalled applications. So I was good to go right away. I think that's a nice feature. They're ready for the Apple Watch.
And the one tip I have for you on that is, if you regularly open up your Mac with your Apple Watch, you have to go in and reset that.
You
have to go through privacy settings. That's in your main Mac settings. And
that's handy, though.
That.
Walk up to the Mac and just opens up, says, "Hi, Leo.
Yeah.
Good to see you again."
Mm-hmm. Yep. Are you ready for the app cap of the year?
This is so challenging, I have to say. I really wasn't sure what to pick. We're picking from apps that we've picked all year long. What is the one, the best? I look like Captain Kangaroo now.
Swap. All my hats do this. We should swap? Okay.
This is a Russian police.
Okay. I'd rather be the police than the captain.
This is a Coast Guard chief hat. Yeah, from the Coast Guard.
There we go.
So much better. I definitely look like Captain Kangaroo now.
All right. So my app is an email app. Because, yes, email is boring.
So important,
but
though.
I spend so much time with it.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this app before. It's called Newton. They're about a year old. And they are not free. It's a subscription service. But you can try it for free. So I just give it a try. Try for 2 weeks. One of the reasons I love them is because they're cross-platform. You can use it on your iPhone. You can use it on your Chromebook. You can use it on your Windows machine. You can use it on your iPad. You can use it on your Apple Watch. You can use it with your Amazon Echo and ask Newton to read your email and respond to email. I'm showing it here, and I'll show you some of the features that I like. One thing is, when you get an email from someone, you often want to know who's sending you that email. So let's say I'm getting the Inside Twit newsletter. Like, who the heck is that? All I have to do is click on that, and nice. It gives me all this information. So here's
that's
the email address.
Your contacts?
No, it's getting it from the web. It's getting it. So even if this person isn't in my contacts, so let's see, Debbie's in my contacts, but Uncommon Goods, that newsletter is probably not in my contacts. So it'll take me right to the website. It'll show me the website. It'll show me the email address. It'll show me more about this information. It says Uncommon Goods has 210 employees. So that's great.
Oh, yeah, that must be from the web, right?
Yeah, so it's just context. That's one of the reasons I love it. I've shown this before, but really great swiping options. So if I want to archive that, I can archive. If I want to pull a little bit longer, I can delete. If I want to pull right, I can reschedule it. So let's say I want to go shopping probably Saturday at 10 a.m. That's when I'm going to have time to shop. And then it's snoozed till Saturday. Here's my Inside Twit. I don't have time to read it right now, but it's really what I enjoy reading at night. So I'm going to say 2 hours when it's nighttime. I'm going to read that. There's just so many things that I love about Newton, and I love that there are some, you know, I don't love paying for things, but it's great that you know that that's how they're making their income and not by, you know, selling your information.
That's great.
So Newton, try it for free for 2 weeks. It's $50 a year.
See, it's funny because this year I went back to Apple's official mail app. I found it did everything I wanted to do. And what I hadn't seen before is that I could use a certificate to sign and encrypt my mail. And I really think that's important. So the fact that Apple Mail supports that, well, most other third-party clients don't, has kind of brought me back, oddly enough, to Apple Mail. This is such a hard choice. There's so many great apps. And you said, well, it should be an app that you use all the time. And, you know, of course, LastPass is in there. I use that. And everybody should be using some password vault. There's other good ones like 1Password and Dashlane. So I don't want to just say LastPass, but that's important. I use Twitterific all the time. It's the best Twitter client. Icon Factory keeps that up to date, and lots of nice features in there. I kind of live on that. Can't deny it. I live on Audible as well. But this is, I guess, I'm going to say this is the app of the year, most improved for 2017, and it's Lightroom. Now, this might be a little controversial because what Adobe has done with Lightroom is for some people a little controversial. If you use Lightroom on the desktop, you now have to subscribe to it, pay a subscription fee. And they're keeping the old Lightroom around for a while as Lightroom Classic. But there are good reasons to go to the new Lightroom for the cloud, because it automatically copies all of your photos up to a terabyte, and you can buy more storage if you want, to the cloud. And then they're automatically synced with your iPad and your iPhone. And so I have 62,000 photos in my photo collection. In fact, we just got back from New York, and amazingly, the photos that I took in New York on my camera and on my iPhone are already here. I took this with a Leica Q, which is my camera I brought with me. And I can do a lot of the editing, the high-end editing that I would do in Adobe Lightroom on my desktop right here. What's really impressive about this is it's preserved. This is a JPEG, although it is a JPEG of a raw photo. Photographers know what I'm talking about there. And it's preserved. Any changes you make are non-destructive and then applied to the raw photo back on the desktop. And that's pretty cool. Let's say I want to turn this into a black and white photo, maybe give it a little bit more vibrance and color. I can play with the effects. I can even do more sharpening. You can zoom in. You can see the details. This is a really sweet program. And there's one other feature that makes this, I think, very attractive, both for the iPhone and the iPad. Adobe Lightroom, the app, has its own camera app, and it takes pictures in RAW. So it's a way that you can, I think, take very nice pictures, even high dynamic range pictures, have all the manual settings that you'd ever want, including white balance, ISO. You can change the shutter speed and so forth. You can, and it saves it in a raw file format directly to Adobe Lightroom. And I think that's really great. So this is, if you're going to be taking a picture, by the way, I have lots of fun filter styles as well. If you're going to be taking a picture and you really want to get the maximum quality out of the picture so that you can later edit it in Adobe Lightroom, I think this is a very nice program. Best of all, this program itself is free, and that's because it works best if you pay for the Lightroom Creative Cloud subscription and you have Creative Cloud on your desktop. And a lot of photographers do. But still, I think just a fantastic app. And I'm going to have to say, kudos to Adobe for making Lightroom on the iPad better and better. And I suspect Photoshop and the other Adobe programs are coming to the iPad Pro and are going to be as powerful. This is the first, though, that's as powerful as the desktop app. And that's pretty exciting. I want to encourage Adobe to keep doing that. Lightroom, if you have an iPad Pro, fantastic. It also works on the iPhone, and all your pictures that you take with your iPhone will go to Lightroom, which is really cool too.
So what about Photoshop Mix and Photoshop Express?
Those yet are not as full-featured as the desktop apps, but it's my prediction that they'll release, in fact, Apple even said this, they're going to release Photoshop for the iPad. That may be our app for the year for 2018, because that's a pretty powerful app. Until then, there are lots of great choices. I particularly like Affinity Photo. It'll be interesting to see what Serif, the makers of Affinity Photo, do to make this thing more and more powerful. What I like is we've got a competition now. Adobe, Affinity, MacFun, and others are making very high-end photo software, trying to get into this market, and we're the benefactors. There's some really great choices available, even for the iPhone and the iPad now.
We've done it. A whole year you've spent with us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Aren't you sorry? That's that's 52 hours. You're never getting back.
You're never getting back. I hope you learned a thing or two. I know I did.
Yeah, we learned it in the show. We learned it as we were going, as is often the case. We do iOS Today. Normally, this one, of course, is a special edition. We pre-recorded because we don't want to be here on the day after Christmas. But you can watch us do it live most Tuesdays, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. That's 1700 UTC. If you want to tune in live, go to twit.tv/live. And if you do that, please join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. That way we can watch you comment. And frankly, the chat room is very helpful. They have lots of great ideas and suggestions. Now, if you aren't watching live, you can always get on-demand versions and watch or listen whenever you want, audio and video available at twit.tv/iOS. Do subscribe, though. That way you'll get every episode automatically.
And we love your questions, Megan at twit.tv. We love to...
And corrections.
And, yes.
And if somebody can figure out... You know, one of the things I'm starting to get from the chat rooms back and forth on this is that sometimes messages, the whole message history is saved, and sometimes it's not. It's very unclear. Anybody at Apple know exactly what the rules are for saving and restoring messages on an iPhone from Apple's Messages app? Let us know. We'd like to know. It seems it's a little confusing.
Right. We'll follow this up. That'll be our New Year's resolution.
Megan at twit.tv. We won't see you again until next year, right? 2018.
Have a happy new year.
Have a great new year. Great holiday week. I hope you get a little time off. Celebrate with family and friends. And we will see you right back here next week on iOS Today. Bye-bye. From now on, we should do the dating game.